to the Superhero of Love podcast. I am Bridget Fonger. I wrote a book called Superhero of Love, Heal Your Broken Heart and Then Go Save the World. That book is going to be out in January 2019, but I didn't want to wait until that time to start talking to superheroes of love. And guess what? Here's the news. You are a superhero of love. And through talking to other superheroes like yourself, tapping into that little superhero inside of you, I'm hoping that you and I and all of us start feeling more and more like superheroes of love, meaning that we love and are loved more than ever before. So welcome. Let's get this party started. Today I went to the house of Trudy Strobel, my dear friend, who I met through Randy and Jody Miller, whose daughter Maya Savin Miller had a bat mitzvah a couple years ago. And at that bat mitzvah, I happened to sit next to Trudy. I was very blessed to sit next to Trudy. You'll find out why when you hear this interview. I'll let her tell the story of how we all came into each other's lives. But the bottom line is, I wanted her to be one of my very first guests because she is a superhero of love like no other. The book that I wrote, Superhero of Love, Heal Your Broken Heart and Then Go Save the World, is really about coming to the other side of any loss or heartache, having the ability to love and be loved more than ever before through the healing of that heartache. And I don't think there's anybody else that exhibits that superhero-dom more than Trudy Strobel. So I'll let you hear from her. Thanks for joining, everybody. How did you end up working with Maya?
Maya became bat mitzvah, and she wanted to include a child that was murdered in the Holocaust. And so Jody was in touch with the director of the museum at that time. Her name is Sam. She called me.
The Holocaust Museum,
yes,
right?
Yes, Sam then called me from the Holocaust Museum and wanted to know if I knew someone, a child that was murdered over there. And so I said, yes, but I know someone who, very well, who had a child that was murdered there. And so that was settled. Her name is Hannah. And an appointment was arranged. Sam just told me when they were coming. I think it was on a Sunday, and Jody and her family, and Sam also had an assistant with her, and so they almost came simultaneously. And Jody, I opened the door, and Jody is standing there. The first time I ever met her. And she's a petite, beautiful little lady. And here she has a challah in her hand.
Aww.
I mean, what are you going to do with such a precious thing? So my name is Jody Miller, and I brought you a challah. Ay, 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 what to do with this? So, okay, I take the challah, and of course I had to hug her. And then the three of them came in, Randy
Maya and oh my God, why are we both
Jesse, my Jesse. Sweet precious Jesse.
We both love and adore.
Yes,
and we couldn't
yes.
Come
here. I'm stuck with Jesse. Oh my precious. So they came in and they're. Came Sam and her assistant, and so we had a wonderful conversation.
Let me stop and say that when they walked into your home, when you walk into Trudy's home, I just want you to know that you walk into essentially a museum, and it is a museum of Trudy's art. Trudy does the most extraordinary embroidery, and this and my passion, I created actually, when you see her artwork, first of all, everybody that sees her artwork wants to have it in their own home immediately. My passion and Jody's passion is also to get her a traveling art show around the United States. So hopefully those of you that are listening to this podcast will someday soon have a
traveling art show of Trudy's artwork in a city near you, but because it is so extraordinary. And you can go actually right now to trudystrobel.com, trudystrobel.com, while you're listening to this podcast, and you can look at her art right now as we speak. Now you may continue. They walked into your museum of a home and you hugged them.
And they were so surprised and started to look at some of the pieces I had created. And after the talk of the Hana, the child that was to be included, and I gave them the history, and I had other information on Leo, and that's the father of Hana.
Oh, okay.
That we knew, and Jody said, "We have to preserve this work," and Sam chimed in, "Yeah, let's do something." And then, of course, Jody told me, I said, "Jody, there is no such thing. Who's going to pay for this?" And then she said, "We're not going to worry about it."
Right.
But I have two wonderful friends, and she wanted me to meet Bridget and Anne, the photographer. And that's how it all started and happened, that I met these three very accomplished women who saw in me something that perhaps no one else had seen or tried to help me with. Mm. And you cannot imagine how grateful and very warm I feel that three women who are so accomplished also thought that I did something special.
Well, I think that many, 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 many people, and many people have bought your artwork, and you've given many pieces over the years, and I know that everyone felt very, very lucky to have your pieces. And
that is true. That is true. But I'm now talking to want to preserve it. Don't you see what an honor that is?
Yes. Yeah.
And this is what I'm talking about. And so...
So the reason I wanted you to come on this podcast, and I wanted you to be one of my very first guests, is that this is the Superhero of Love podcast, which is related to my book, Superhero of Love, Heal Your Broken Heart, and Then Go Save the World. And I know you haven't read the book, but you've heard me complaining about the process all along the way.
Yes.
The whole point of the book is for people to land at the end of the book being able to love and be loved more than ever before after some sort of loss or heartache. Mm-hmm. And I think that we can probably all agree that you had one of the most ultimate heartaches in your childhood. And one of the reasons that we are in awe of you is that your heart is so open and so... let me just say to the audience that every single person that Trudy meets, she meets them with the most open heart, and she generally grabs their face and holds their face in her hands and looks into their soul. And like that bravery even of wanting your heart to touch their heart upon meeting. Most of us are not that open-hearted when we first meet people. You know what I mean? It's a huge gift that you have. So the reason I wanted you to come on is you are the person in my life who I am most in awe of having the hugest, most open heart, particularly given where you came from. So now I would love for you to tell these listeners why I am so in awe of you. Tell us about what your childhood was like.
I was born in Neukartitsa, which is a kolkhoz in Ukraine. At that time, it was Russia, 1938. And a kolkhoz is a state farm. And life was very hard there. I was born in 38, but I must regress a little bit to explain as to what had happened to me in the future then. And my father, he was the director of this kolkhoz, and he got merchandise in and got the milk and meat and whatever out to the little towns around. And in one of his journeys, he saw a beautiful doll. My mother was with child, and he was so hoping for a little girl. So this was such an opportunity. Where do you find an old bisque doll? At that time, it wasn't that old. In 38, it was probably 20 years old, this doll. And he brought it home, and my mother was so pleased. And they really secured their hopes of a little girl at that time. In November of 37, my father was picked up by the police of the area, the communistic police, and they knocked on the door. And Vasilia, you have to come. Of course, he expected something already because there were rumors as he was going into towns, they're going to get you next time. And they had taken many Jewish men away before, and he was one of the last to go. And so they came in November that night, and everything happens at night in communistic Russia. And they took him out. I was then born in March of 38, which was just 2 months later or so. And so after I was born and Mama could walk, she then took me in her arms and she went to Krivoy Rog, is the next town where the prison was. And she did get there, and she was in line with many women for their husbands, brothers, different relations. And it was her turn now to ask, where is Vasilia? He's already gone. He's taken to Siberia. And so the hurt, I'm sure, that she felt is unimaginable. And so we walked home. She walked home. And life continued on this kolkhoz till 42. She had to milk cows twice a day, 10 of them, and clean the stalls. And there I was, the baby. I can't imagine what she really went through because my life was so different afterwards. Then in 42... the Nazis came, and they also knocked on the door. You have to get out. Take things with you, immediate things, in a few hours. We would be going with other, there were other Jewish families there, women and children, and we were told to put everything on a wagon. And this wagon was pulled by horses. Of course, I didn't have much. I only had my beautiful Papa doll that I carried with me and had with me every day, all the time. And so Mama just took immediate warm clothes and some food, whatever food we had, and loaded it on the wagon. And the caravan started to move. There were many wagons with horses, and the Nazi soldiers were on horse watching this caravan go along. And we stopped then in some places. I don't know the names or anything, but I only know that I was cold, hungry, and I was holding on to my Papa doll. And as it happened, one of these Nazi guards came and he pulled away my doll. And I cried, and Mama said, "Shh, shh, quiet." She was afraid that something might happen to me. And so the journey continued, and we finally arrived at Łódź. Łódź is in Poland, and there we were guided to go into a room, in a large room, women and children only, and we had to undress. And this was called Entlausung. Entlausung means taking off the lice. And so we were in, as I say, in this room. Nothing but fear gets into you, seeing everyone naked and children there. And fear, 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 my dear friends. And then we came out were placed in the Łódź ghetto, my mother and I. And there again, we were with a group of families in a large room because there was no room anymore. And mother, when she was younger, she studied to be a tailor. But here she was used as a seamstress. And so this is how we really survived, with her capability to sew. And I was with her all the time. And that was in Łódź. Now we were told that we would be transferred to a camp somewhere else and to go to the train station. And we had nothing with us. I think Mama just had a bag. As we come there, train station, these were all cattle wagons, dear friends, cattle wagons. And then they had planks by the doors, you know how you get cattle in, so we were going. And then they screamed, "Schnell, schnell," fast, fast, and "you dirty Jews, dreckige Jude." And so they also used gun butts. Rifle butts, and sort of help pushing. So we came into this cattle car, and there were, it was not clean. It still had a smell. And in one corner was a pail that was supposed to be for emergencies, I would be guessing. But there were so many people in this cattle car, there was no place to sit. Nothing was given to us. Water or food or anything. We were in this, I was just next to Mama. Since I was little, I could sort of squeak down between the legs. And what can one say? Some people got sick and they vomited. Maybe some of you have smelled vomit, but this was for days, this vomit smell. And it becomes very bad, and some people just fainted. It was horrendous. One cannot explain the horror of this whole experience. And I didn't talk much from the time my doll was torn away from me. And so, okay, we now arrive, and raus, ihr Juden, raus. And all I really saw all the time, I didn't see the faces so much as the boots, the shiny boots of these Gestapos, I should say Nazi soldiers, and dog's teeth. They had German Shepherd dogs, dog's teeth. And fear, as I say, hunger, we were weak. We were then told to go to certain barracks. There were lots of barracks there. I called them houses, but these were all barracks. And then we were a group of, I don't know how many, and they had double beds, bunk beds, but these weren't beds. These were wooden, okay, let's say they're beds, on the wooden part. But all you had was wooden planks, and on top of it, mattresses that were filled with straw that now already were crumbling and dirty. And the pillows were dirty. and to go to go to the bathroom, I was so afraid to go. I couldn't go because everything was they were just wooden benches with holes, and you know there were accidents. It was terribly gruesome. So I didn't want to go, and you know that brought other problems for me, and it has haunted me the rest of my life. So their mother worked also, and she sewed, and I was with her. The miraculous thing is that I'm still alive, because generally, or what we read in history and what happened, children then were taken away, but I am here. And
thank God.
My sweet mother, she was the strong person of my life, and she is the hero of my life.
And she also survived.
Yes, she survived. Actually, we then one day, we were then in another camp, but I don't know how long we were there either. Then an American soldier came. The war is over. You're free. So now here we are. We're all filthy, tattered clothes, and the free. Where are we going to go? Then they said, go to, we had to walk a ways down on the road. Go and trucks will pick you up and take you to housing. And so Mama said, Trudele, come. We're gonna make it. We're gonna make it. Mm-hmm. And so we walked down, and as we walked in the fields, in the grass, there were small marguerites, and in Europe they only grow like 3 inches tall, and they were so beautiful to me that I picked a few and I gave them to my mama. Oh. I'll never forget, and she smiled at me. So then we were transported on trucks, and we arrived in a displacement camp. My dear friends, you cannot believe the beauty of this camp. We come there, we can bathe, soap, imagine that. And we got new clothes, and the beds, the beds had mattresses, everything was clean, and food, it smelled so delicious. They had a big cafeteria, and we were given stainless steel trays that had compartments for food that I still see today in plastic, and they're, but that was stainless steel, shiny, beautiful food tray for me. And so we could choose what we wanted to eat. And Mama encouraged, she says, don't eat, just a little, only a little bit. And of course, gradually then, you know, you were able to eat. But this is how a new life started to us in this displacement camp.
Yeah.
And one day, a group of ladies came in from the Red Cross. And they brought the children wooden boxes with pencils and pens and an eraser and a little toy. Now, mine had beads, my dear friends, beads. So I take them in my hand, and I look at them, and I say, oh, Mama, look at this. Look at this beauty, this gold and silver. And she saw a smile of me in my face, in my face, and she knew that I'd be okay. And she said, Trudele will make something of this. Could it be a goose, Mama? Because I love geese. And so she found a picture in the camp, and then she transferred the picture on parchment paper, and from her skirt she tore a piece of fabric that had been cleaned at this time, that was still from Russia, and she attached it to this fabric, and taught me how to insert the needle, bring it up, put a bead in it, go down, and there was this flying goose on this parchment paper. And she says, Trudele, be careful. Put the beads close together by the neck so the goose will have a stiff neck so it can fly. Mm. And of course, I believed her. But I do have this piece. I couldn't quite finish it because we didn't have enough beads. She says, oh, we'll finish it in America. And so it was done, of course. And
was that always her dream to get you to America?
Yes, okay. that was her dream. And when I was told about it all the time, yes, I want to go to America, of course. And from there, we were given a room in Bavaria. And a room, imagine this, because here in the displacement camp, we were still together, but we had the luxuries of life at that time. For us, that was luxury. And so here we had our own room in Bavaria, in a town called Ammershausen. And that's a very historic town because it existed already from 900, and there one-third of the population always were Jews. And they had a wonderful synagogue. And, of course, I saw it burned down. They said the SS came in.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. When you were there?
No, it was already done.
It was already
burned
down.
Yeah, this is now after the war.
This is after.
Yeah, this is after the war. And so Mama sewed there. And it was a town which... I feel perhaps was very Nazi oriented, and but one or two people in this town, they were all farmers, helped Mama to that she could sew, and what they needed to have done is there was in this is now in 46. And there was no fabric anywhere to be had at that time. So she would open up a wool coat, which everyone had in these cold countries, and turn it around and then sew it together again as a coat, and then they would have a fresh new coat.
Oh, yes. Genius.
Yeah. And she was quite capable that helped us along because we did get some money from the state and food stamps, but it just wasn't enough. And so we lived through that. And I started to attend school, and I learned how to read, write, and speak German. And we were there in this town for 5 years before we could come to America. And
so what I'm always in awe of is that from the moment you were born until age 7 is when you were released from the concentration camp.
Yes.
So for the first 7 years of your life, you were essentially in prison.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Only oppression, yeah. You only knew oppression.
Yes, yes.
And I actually
and
I like...
Fear and hunger.
Fear and hunger, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes. And so the joyous day came and we could leave through Bremerhaven. What are they called? Where the ships...
A port.
A port. It's mm-hmm. a port, Bremerhaven. And... we left on General Hahn, that was the name of the ship, and it was an army ship. So we entered there, and there were the two beds. But you see, an army ship, pillows and blankets. It was all comfort and all the food in the world, except the sea was very, very nervous.
Oh my gosh.
And a lot of people couldn't eat. But it took, I think, 6 to 8 days, somewhere in there. to come to New York, and the captain said, Statue of Liberty! Oh, I tell you, my dear friends, we went up on deck, and Mama cried. We saw the Statue of Liberty, and this was our freedom now. And we arrived there, and from there we took a train to Chicago, and that is where we started our life in America.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so how, I don't understand. I literally don't understand how you start the first 7 years of your life in such despair, and you have such an open heart. Like, I really, tell me how, was your mother an open-hearted person as well?
My mother was a very concerned mother just for me. I was her life. That's all she had. And so she wanted the best for me, and that was the wish to be in America, because evidently read about it. And she was a loving person.
She was a loving person.
Yes, and helped many people.
Wow.
Yeah.
So tell me, I don't even know. I truly am in awe. I really am in awe of how open-hearted you are. And I don't even know how to, like, do you remember, the walking out of the displacement camp and walking out of the concentration camp, excuse me, that's a big mistake, walking out of the concentration camp, and the first thing you do is grab a bouquet of marguerites.
Because they were so beautiful.
I know, but the fact that your heart was open to see the beauty and have the beauty touch your heart, and for you to go over and grab the bouquet and give it to your mother is awe-inspiring.
She said, Trudele, we're going to make it. Come, come. And so we start to walk, and this is how it happened. I don't know. That's just...
I know. And you are like that with every single... I've never seen you meet somebody that you weren't that open-hearted with. And it's awe-inspiring that you... So how did you come to a place? Would you call it a place of forgiveness?
You see, at that time, I didn't think about forgiveness at all.
Mm-hmm.
We just were struggling along to work, and I went to school, as you know, and after school, I would meet Mama wherever she was sewing and helped her. At that time, I didn't think this way, but when I got older and started to think back. Do you know, hatred makes you bitter, and I could never hate. So
you were never bitter, or was there a time when you felt like you were becoming bitter?
No.
Okay, so no. Even as you grew older and you kind of looked back and understood what you had been through as a child.
Yes.
You didn't even become bitter then. You know how that happens sometimes?
That yes.
Someone
yes,
who recognizes yes, the trauma of a childhood. Yes.
Well, Bridget, dear, I was then in Chicago. Now I'm 18. I worked and went to school, to high school, and I was grasping with English and or grappling, whatever the word would be. And... one day, Mama said, Mama had a friend, Teresa, and Tante Teresa, she came to. She said, Masha, do I have a wonderful Jewish boy for Gertrude? A German Jewish boy. And I said, Mama, this is how naive I was. I said, Mama, I really want an American boy.
Wait, why is that naive? I don't understand why that's naive.
Because you can be American, Chinese, or whatever, and still be Jewish.
Oh.
So,
oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, yes.
That's so funny.
So yes, it was set. She, Tante Teresa, in my day, in my young years, we called a friend of the family aunt or uncle. And so it was set on a Sunday afternoon, and she brought Hans. Hans was my husband's name. And we were going to have coffee at our house. And I come in the room. I'm now thinking of Lederhosen. You see, in Bavaria, men were Lederhosen. That's why I didn't want to meet him. And so I come in the room.
So you thought he was going to be all dressed up in his Bavarian garb?
With a feather in his hat. So I come in the room, my sweet Bridget, and there across the room, there is this gorgeous man, and he's standing up with a suit.
Like an American.
Like an American. And a tie, and I remember still that suit, and our eyes clicked, and it was electric.
I just got chills.
It was electrifying, my dear.
Wow.
I can't say this on the microphone. but it was electrifying. So the next Sunday, we didn't see each other, talk to each other. The next Sunday, we go to Tante Teresa's to be together again. And then
your mother or with
yeah
mother?
With my mother
with
of
your
course
mother
oh yes
okay.
yes oh,
oh always
supervised
okay.
here
okay
and
that's
so,
hilarious.
And really I was a very naive 18-year-old, and so here we meet there, and on Monday we met privately. Now I won't go into details, but 4 weeks later we were married.
Did you have any boyfriends before that, or were there any boys like across the schoolroom where you?
Yes,
thought?
There were boys in school.
Okay,
but you see, I worked after school every day,
my goodness.
And I had homework, and really, my life was a continuous. You have to work
hard work.
Yeah, you have to work, and I did. Of course, I saw. How would I have recognized that this man was beautiful?
Yeah,
if I didn't. You
right.
know, look at other boys.
Still, just you know, more. No, I was looking for some more racy stories. I'm kidding.
no, that's about all we can understand
story.
Here today. This isn't that enough, my friends. Okay, now we came to California, and we never talked to our sons about my incarceration, and Hans lived in hiding all of his young life. I mean,
during the war.
Yeah, during the war. Mm-hmm. And so they were now teenagers ready to attend college. And we then had a family gathering and told them, why didn't you tell us earlier? It was such a catharsis of family love, such closeness that developed, and much closer than ever before, because these are now teenagers in America.
Did they have any guess that you had been in the Holocaust, that you had been imprisoned? Guessed it? They
No. It just was never discussed. And, so it's one of these unusual things, but this is what happened, dear.
So tell me, Trudy does a lot of speaking engagement. She talks to all different age groups, but lots of kids. And I know that you've talked to kids that have really hard lives, like students.
Right.
You've been
right.
to, you know, like third grade classes where the students have very difficult lives, and I would love to hear what advice, what one or two or three or however many pieces of advice you wish to give to someone who's in a difficult circumstance, to help them keep their heart open. In other words, I think it's a natural instinct to shut down your heart when such extreme pain happens.
Yes.
So how do you, what would you say to somebody?
To the students, I encourage them to always have hope. And if they see any unusual thing happening, like students say that they're with, that they're called names because perhaps they're a different color, a different religion, go to the help of that student, because we all have eyes and noses and mouths, and we all have this a face, just different colors, and that's why we are so beautiful on this earth. And I encourage them to study hard, because this will give them a better life, a better chance on life. Mm-hmm. And then I always tell them, you are our future. You must do well, because our country right now is being attacked by the uppers in this political society, and many people are hurt. They have to go back to their own country again. And where is the country where we all came in? It's not the same America that I remember. And then, you see, I hear the sound in the back of my ear, the same sound of hatred. And that's my students. We must get along and help each other. And this is how America will become great. Not great again, that America will stay great.
Stay great, that's great. So in the face of hatred, stay hopeful.
Yes.
And I just think, I mean, I'm just so grateful that you're talking to kids. I want you to talk to as many kids as possible, and hopefully some children will hear this as well. But because if you could survive what you survived, and still, in the face of it, say, stand up against bullies and keep your heart open and keep hope.
Yes. You see, in this little town in Bavaria, the reason I said it had a Nazi existence is because even then I heard the word Jew faintly mentioned behind my back. And I never had a girlfriend there, talking about other people. Mm-hmm. Never had a girlfriend. I don't know. That's what it was. And in America, it wasn't that anyone was prejudicial against me. It's just economically, I didn't fit in with the girls that were dressed in store-bought clothes. And that in the 50s was the thing, to have store-bought clothes. And so, you know, in different ways you're affected by society, but that's okay.
Hmm.
Because we all have, I have never wanted to be rich, let's say that. I've never wanted to be rich, just have enough bread and butter and maybe one or two finer things in life that you can enjoy the rest of your life. And I have so much love for everyone that my life is joy.
Mm.
I wake up in the morning, and if I see I just think, oh, the sun is coming out. It's another rainbow day.
Yes. It's another rainbow day. That's beautiful.
Right. And this is what I encourage to my students. I love my students when I talk to them, and then they show this appreciation on the end, or even later on I receive all these wonderful notes, and then you know that you spoke from your heart and it was accepted, and they learned about hope, forgiveness, and
love,
concern and love, yeah, yeah, for everyone around, right?
Yeah. And you know that you've touched their hearts. So, but you have to have an open heart to begin with. So your open heart touches theirs and it opens their hearts. I've read some of the letters from the students that Trudy has visited, and it's very clear that your heart opened their hearts up a little bit.
Isn't that miraculous? I just talk how I feel, and that's how my work is. I feel this work, and then I draw it and create it, and the colors blend in. I trust my needle.
You trust your heart, right?
Well, yes.
Your heart's speaking through the needle.
Yes, I think so, my dear Bridget. Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Trudy, for sharing your wisdom and for helping people. Hopefully by the end of listening to this podcast and listening to you, they'll open their hearts a little bit more too.
Oh,
thank you.
That would be my greatest joy. I thank you for listening to me.
Oh, so beautiful. Thank you, Trudy.
Thanks for joining us, Superheroes of Love. Go check out Trudy Strobel at trudystrobel.com.